Father of Storms. Written by Dean Jones. Produced by Be Here. Episode 13.
Be Here. Bringing books to life. Vision without sight.
Chapter 24. Waiting for News. They had been searching for 2 days across London, with Hope leading the way, trying to pick up on her father's energy. Days were long, as they were constantly trying to remain inconspicuous so as to avoid unwanted attention from those they were sure were searching for them. Yesterday, there were still several blacked-out cars circling the area around Hyde Park. Hope had spotted one after they had gone past the Albert Hall, then down Queensgate. It didn't seem out of place due to the high number of consulates in the area, but Hope knew the people inside were not diplomats. They had ducked down behind a parked post van when she saw the first, then shot into a cafe when the second appeared. Hope could feel the vehicles were carrying people looking for them, specifically as her abilities had grown significantly over the last couple of days. She was now able to discern the intent of people simply by feeling their energy signature. It was a skill she knew her father would be immensely proud of if she could only tell him. They had then followed his energy trail through Hyde Park, only to come across several of the same people who had taken him away. At first, Marcy didn't believe they were anything to be worried about, as many people wear black suits in London. However, Hope had managed to pick up on their emotions and found curiosity and frustration within them. This, coupled with the pictures in her hand of them both, made it clear they were searching for them. They had managed to evade them several times, but the constant running and hiding took them away from the trail on the first day, so they decided to return to the hotel with a plan to begin again the next day. Today, they would return to where they left off. Hyde Park was once again a hive of activity as people milled through the park or sat enjoying the summer sun with friends or loved ones. Hope noticed there were no cars or men with their photographs in the area, and that gave her a boost, as she wanted to find her father. All the ducking and hiding caused this to be delayed.
Less of the Black Suits Brigade out today, I noticed, Mum,
she said as they walked along the path.
Yes, I noticed that too. Hopefully they have moved elsewhere to search and we can finally track down your dad.
But then Hope spotted a blacked-out car passing the entrance to the park. This wasn't unusual, but given this was the same type of car they had been avoiding the previous day, it gave her a start to see it. She held her breath as the car slowed, then released it as it turned away and headed in the opposite direction.
You a little jumpy, love?
Marcy asked.
A little. No harm being prepared, right?
She smiled before turning back to the path ahead and opening up her senses. The air was filled with a multitude of energies, and she knew that finding her father's among these was getting more difficult as the days passed. They walked briskly towards the Serpentine, past the Royal Humane Society and the place they had left the previous day. They had discovered that avoiding detection was harder than they expected it would be, but with so many people visiting the city, they found they could blend into the crowds as they moved in the direction they wanted to go. Due to the need to stay hidden, the search took a lot longer than they would have liked. They reached the place they had been the day before and stood facing out across the lake. There were crowds of people standing around, either waiting to hire boats or taking pictures of the magnificent scenery. Hope took another look around as she focused carefully on the energies around her. The abundance of people wasn't helpful, so it took her a while to pick up anything of her father. Finally, she sensed something familiar and opened her eyes to see a wisp of energy move away to their left.
This way, let's go,
she said, as she turned and walked in the direction the trail led her. They marched quickly, and Hope resisted the urge to run as they turned. They then headed down Serpentine Road towards the exit before arriving at Hyde Park Corner. Traffic was creeping past them, and Hope scanned the lines of cars to ensure there were none of those she knew had people looking for them inside.
"Why have they taken this route?"
Hope asked as they made their way across the street, then down Grosvenor Place.
"Actually, why drive through the park? There are roads around it, that would be easier."
"I suspect it was to do with speed. I wouldn't think they would want your dad waking up to find himself in their custody. This is probably the most direct route to wherever they were taking him,"
Marcy replied. It made sense. Hope tried to imagine what would have happened if her dad had woken. The fact that there were no signs of destruction pointed towards the fact that they had made it to wherever they were going fast enough for him to remain unconscious. Then they found the building where the trail ended. It was a huge, glass-fronted structure, towering above the other buildings. They had gone quite a distance from where he was taken and found themselves standing alongside the Thames next to Vauxhall Bridge, staring up at this imposing building. Outside, there were several cars and people in black suits. It was clear that this was the intended destination, even without Hope's ability to pick up on her father's energy. They quickly hid themselves across the street from the entrance and waited to see if there were obvious ways to get in. The front entrance was clearly out of the question, so they circled around the building towards its rear to see if there was another way in.
"More security than the Queen has,"
Marcy said as they peered around a corner at a loading bay, swarming with people.
"There are cameras too. Lots of them,"
Hope said, pointing at the white security devices attached to all vantage points overlooking the grounds of the building. Hope had felt jubilation at finding him, but the dawning realization they couldn't get in without being discovered hit them both hard.
"Now we know where he is, love. Should we go back to the hotel and find a way to get in? We could go to one of those internet cafes and use satellite maps or something to find another entrance that might be less guarded,"
Marcy asked. Hope scanned the area again, knowing her mother was right, but also wanting to discover something that would help them get in now.
"Yeah, I suppose that's the best idea,"
she finally said, looking resigned. Having made the tough decision to return to the hotel, they headed back, knowing they needed another plan. Hope reached from her bed to turn off a mobile phone alarm. In truth, she'd been awake for a couple of hours watching as her mother restlessly tossed in her bed. They had both been in heightened states since she had spoken with the Mara. Her mother hadn't slept properly since the day he was taken. She lifted the phone to check the time, then glanced over to her mum, who was now sitting in her bed staring towards the curtains. Hope had become used to her mother's anxieties over the last couple of days, though the belief that her dad would somehow just saunter down the road and into the hotel was something she herself didn't believe would happen, even though she knew what he was capable of. The fact that he hadn't come straight to them meant something wasn't right. The Mara's concern had only intensified this feeling in her gut.
"You get much sleep, Mum?"
Hope asked as she swung her legs from the bed onto the floor.
"What, love? Oh, sleep. I got a few hours, yes. How about you? Any visits through the night?"
She was referring to the Mara, and although Hope wished she had heard from them, the truth was she had not dreamed of anything she could recall. Hope shook her head, and her mum smiled before lifting herself from the bed and making her way to the window. Early morning sunlight filled the room as she parted the curtains. Hope blinked as her eyes adjusted to the brightness. Hope moved to stand by her mum, then looked down onto the street. It was sparsely populated, but as it was still only 7 in the morning, it wasn't a surprise. She expected it to become busier as people headed for the station to get to work.
"I'm going to get a shower, Mum. I won't be long."
Her mum nodded absently as Hope headed for the bathroom. Hope stood and let the water rush over her, letting her mind wander. As she did so, she soon found herself in the mental state needed to commune with spirit. Tentatively, she called out for the Mara, though in truth she was reluctant as her last encounter had left her fearful.
"Mara, are you there?"
There was a long pause. She thought she heard something, but but it was faint, like a scratching in another room.
Mara, is that you? Please come closer.
Again, she wasn't sure about the request, but felt confident they wouldn't hurt her intentionally.
Little mistress?
Hope caught her breath as she attempted to remain composed. Focusing on the sound of the Mara, she waited.
Ah, little mistress, you have returned. Do you wish to hear news of our master's torture?
Hope could think of several things she would rather hear of than that, and shook her head.
Is he well?
She asked instead, even though it was a dumb question, as she was sure being tortured was not something that made people well.
He is fighting, mistress. We are doing as you suggested, bringing him dreams of his family and life. It is giving him strength.
There was a hissing noise. Once again, the sound caused her to lose concentration. It took several minutes before she could center herself again.
Your father took to communicating with us as a baby to rest, little mistress. He is truly a great man who is blessed. We would expect more from you.
Their criticism stung. She became defensive and angry. Now, of all times, the Mara would point out she wasn't as good as her dad.
Be that as it may, Mara, I'm here now. I want to know how my father is.
The words were spoken forcefully. She felt each one leave her like an arrow.
I have been busy searching the city and believe we have located the building he is being held. Now tell me about my father, please.
She added the polite addition after a moment's pause.
As you wish, mistress. We apologize. We meant no offense.
The Mara replied, sounding a little more respectful.
Your father is currently sleeping after suffering injuries during questioning and is now reliving some significant points of his life,
they reported.
We have taken the time to explore his surroundings, specifically looking for the one who blocks his mind.
Hope raised her eyebrows at this.
And what did you discover?
She asked.
We are sure the man who holds him is the same man we met when your mother was first alive. We think his name is Corey. He was also a teacher of your father when he was just a boy.
The news hit her hard. Another from 1,000 years ago, and now he was holding her father prisoner.
I do not believe in coincidence, Mara. This man must have been hunting for my father. What else can you tell me of him?
There was an energetic crackle as the Mara drew closer.
We know he is not concerned with anything but his own interests, mistress. We also know that he was integral to the plot to kill our master's wife. We have seen it in his dreams. We need to prepare your father and show him what we have seen.
Mara circled beside Hope in the shower. She suddenly became aware of her naked state, turned and covered herself with her arms. The action brought laughter from the Mara, though she wasn't certain it was laughter, but couldn't explain the sound as anything other.
Your modesty is unnecessary, mistress. We are of the same sex,
they said as they lowered their hoods. Hope saw them for the first time. She struggled to put the harsh whispers and screech laughter at the beautiful faces she was now looking at. They were clearly twins. Both had long black hair held back in a ponytail with a ribbon. Their porcelain white skin was a stark contrast to their black eyes, but Hope found kindness in them. For the first time, she didn't feel afraid in their presence. Feeling a little foolish, she dropped her hands.
What have you seen in this man's dreams, Mara? Can you show me?
There were whispers around her as the Mara discussed the idea.
We can, little mistress, but it will need your total focus. Can you do that, given you tell us of your tiredness?
Hope took a deep breath.
I am ready. Show me what you have discovered.
Chapter 25. It was always the truth. Marcy heard the alarm on her daughter's phone start to play. The sound was the most irritating noise her phone had to offer. This seemed to be the only thing that would wake Hope, so it was no surprise when the noise stopped a few seconds later.
You get much sleep, Mum?
She heard Hope ask. She turned to watch her swing her legs from the bed onto the floor. They had both been in heightened states since Hope had spoken with the Mara. In truth, Marcy hadn't slept properly since the day he'd been taken. Marcy turned back to face the window. She had found comfort in looking down at the streets below. Even though the likelihood of her husband appearing was slim, she still held hope that he would. Scanning the streets had a second purpose. One, she didn't want to tell her daughter. She checked to see if anyone had found them, as she was certain they would be searching, especially given the amount of people they had hidden from over the last couple of days. In truth, she didn't expect to be found, yet she wasn't sure they were safe either, so watching gave her something productive to do. The first night, she figured Seth would be strolling through the street toward them and wanted to be there to see him coming. That feeling had gone now, replaced by a desire to scour the city.
What, love? Oh, sleep. I got a few hours, yes. How about you? Any visits through the night?
She was referring to the Mara. Her heart sank when Hope shook her head.
I'm going to take a shower, Mum. Won't be long,
Hope said. Marcy nodded her head, then watched as her daughter's reflection passed behind her into the bathroom. She waited for the door to close before dropping into the chair beside the window. It had been an exhausting few days, and lack of sleep was beginning to take its toll. As she stared out the window, she realised that this was the longest time she had been apart from her husband since they first met nearly 19 years ago. Yesterday had brought them the closest they had been since he had been taken, but it was agonising to realise they could not get to him. She waited for the sound of water to flow from the bathroom. It had been so long since she had spent this much time away from Seth. Closing her eyes, she thought back to the day he was taken. The sky filled with black clouds, and a feeling she had felt before came over her. She fell into another memory as she recalled the first time she witnessed what Seth was capable of. It had been a week of fun and laughter. Seth had finally moved in with her, and they had spent long nights redecorating the house they had bought in Exeter. There had been talk of moving elsewhere, but she wasn't ready to move away from her parents yet. The house was a roomy Victorian detached on a quiet street on the edge of the city. The front of the house had four large wooden sash windows that still worked, though Seth had to force the bedroom window to fully open. The gardens circled the home, with the back being a long, wide space filled with tall grass and a collection of overgrown brambles and weed patches. The path that led from the streets was in much the same way. Inside, it had three bedrooms and two reception rooms, all with an old decor that needed sprucing up. The kitchen and bathroom desperately needed modernising, but it felt like home. They had searched for a few months for the right house, and they had become frustrated with the flat they had previously lived in. It was excellent for Marcy to get to work, but Seth had maintained that her working was not necessary, as he could comfortably provide for them both.
I've been saving for a long time, he said.
Not this 2,000-year-old man thing again,
she mocked. Seth smiled.
All I am saying is you don't need to work if you don't want. I'm a traditional type who believes it is my place to provide, and I have plenty of money to do that without the need for you to be getting up at 7 every morning, then come home tired and frustrated at 6.
He put his hand on her face.
Plus, I miss you when you are not here.
That had been the thing to convince her. She missed him terribly, and often found herself texting or email when she should be looking for holidays for the customers sitting opposite her. They had been together for over 5 years and had got married the year before. A chance to create a home of their own was something they had both wanted, and, who knows, maybe a baby or two to help them fill it. Marcy looked at herself in the tall mirror in the bedroom. A new black dress had been bought for the occasion, and she was pleased with how it fit. She brushed off the hair that had found its way onto the garment, then took a last look. grabbed her purse and sat down on the bed to wait for Seth to come out the shower. Tonight was going to be their celebration of their new home. Seth had booked a meal at a swanky Thai restaurant in the city, and they planned to paint the town once they had eaten. It had been a while since they were able to let their hair down, and she was excited to have a night away from paint pots and wallpaper. Seth emerged from the ensuite. They had hired a builder to add this to their master bedroom. Apparently, Seth liked having a shower and a toilet within a hopping distance of his bed, so had insisted that they have one installed. There were a few jobs around the house that they had brought outside help to complete, but most of the decor and little jobs they had done themselves, even though Seth argued they should simply pay someone to do it.
I will not become lazy. Because we can afford to hire people doesn't mean we should. I like doing these jobs myself. It adds a little piece of us into our house, and that's what makes it feel like home.
Seth hadn't argued. She watched as her husband made his way across the room. His thick hair, still damp from the shower, clung to his broad shoulders. The towel was wrapped around his waist as he opened up the wardrobe to get his clothes out. Marcy watched his reflection in the mirror and willed the towel to fall. She loved to see him naked, and although eager to get out, a few minutes' distraction wouldn't hurt. They finally reached the restaurant, 10 minutes late. They stood at the bar and waited for the table to become ready. Luckily, it had been a busy evening, and the previous occupants had only just left the building. They laughed as the waiter told them how sorry he was for their wait, and that a bottle of house white had been placed on the table as an apology for this. Their meal was magnificent. The colours and smells of the food made the experience one which he intended to do often. In the background, the sound of melodic music drifted through the room, adding to the feeling of enjoyment. Seth did his usual of asking Marcy to order the thing he wanted to taste, while he got himself the safe option. He had a thing about not wanting to waste food, so it fell to Marcy to take the risks, as she had a better palate than he did. At first, this was irritating, but over the years she had grown used to it and now found it cute that a big, burly man like Seth was afraid to try new things in case it wasn't to his liking, and he had to order something else. Later that night, they found themselves outside a nightclub. The queue was quite long, so they stood for 10 minutes before Seth suggested they head home for a nightcap rather than getting sweaty in a club with a lot of youngsters. Clubbing wasn't his thing, and Marcy knew he only entertained the idea to make her happy. So, she agreed. They set off down the street before turning into a back alley. This was a shortcut to the taxi rank everyone used. As they emerged onto the quiet street, they turned towards the rank, holding hands and enjoying their time together.
It's been a lovely night. Thank you, love.
Marcy said.
Made all the better for the beautiful company of my wife.
He replied with a cheeky wink.
Who I am looking forward to getting home.
Marcy felt herself blush as her stomach filled with butterflies. She too was looking forward to getting home.
What's this then, lads? Two lovebirds ready in for some action?
A voice called from behind them. Marcy turned to see a chunky boy, probably 18, eyeing Marcy predatorily. Behind him, two of his friends, who were smaller but around the same age, walked with a cocky arrogance youth and alcohol gave them.
Lovely bird you have there, mate. She's a beauty, Gaz,
the smallest of the three shouted. He was a thin, spotty boy with blonde hair, which was long on one side and shaved on the other. His friend Gaz, who was almost as tall as Seth, with spiked black hair and a nose piercing, grinned at him.
You're right, Steve. What do you think, Smitty?
He asked the other, who was staring at her creepily with his small brown eyes from behind his greasy black hair. Smitty shook his head slightly. Clearly his intention was for something else.
Pretty little thing you have there, mate,
Gaz said to Seth.
Feel like sharing her, do you?
Marcy tucked into Seth, who placed a protective arm around her. She could feel the muscles in his side and arm tense, letting her know he was ready to fight if needed. The streetlights filled the road with an orange glow, not enough light to see clearly, but it enabled people to navigate the street without stumbling over any unseen objects. She placed a hand on her husband's chest.
"Let's just go, Seth,"
she said, trying to sound confident and not at all concerned by these three louts.
"Don't go yet, darling. We've had a rubbish night and need something to reward us, if you know what I mean."
Smitty and Stee both sniggered as they closed the distance between them. Now she was getting scared. Seth was big, but there were three of them. As she considered Seth's chances, Gaz pulled a knife from his belt.
"There are two ways this can go, mate,"
he said to Seth.
"We get our way and you watch quietly, or I cut you and she watches you die as we take her anyway."
Marcy looked around for help, perhaps some passers-by, but there was no one within shouting distance. She knew full well that the chances of people stumbling on them were remote, as the clubs didn't start letting people out for another hour. They had left early to avoid the rush and provide them with a quick journey home so they could enjoy their time together alone. Until then, Seth had just been watching them. Marcy wondered what he was thinking.
"There's a third option and possibly a fourth,"
Seth said confidently.
"Option three is you and your little friends turn around and go back the way you came. We'll be on our way, no harm done."
She watched as Seth made eye contact with each of them.
"Fourth option? Well, let's just say if I were you, option three is a no-brainer."
Again, he looked at each of them, but lingered on Gaz.
"No one lays a finger on my woman, understand?"
He had called her his woman. Marcy felt a slight irritation at the old-fashioned term, but also protected by his demeanour. Seth had a way of speaking certain phrases that appeared out of place. He'd always said it was due to his Cheshire roots, and she found it fascinating that he saw people the way he did. It was something she found added to his mystery and attractiveness when they first met.
"You're mental, mate,"
Gaz laughed.
"There's no way you leave here without me sticking my cock into her,"
he pointed with his knife. Suddenly, the two smaller boys had her arms and were dragging her away from Seth. Seth reached for her, but Gaz was onto him in a flash. She saw the knife plunge into his side as he tumbled with the thickest boy. Panic took her. She screamed before a hand was placed over her mouth, cutting it off. Then there were hands all over her, pulling at her dress. She immediately regretted her choice of clothes as they found it easy to pull her dress up over her waist. Her legs thrashed as she bit down on the fingers of one hand over her mouth. There was a scream of pain as the owner pulled his hand away. Suddenly, she was free, but as soon as she began to move towards Seth, another hand grabbed her hair and yanked her backwards. Gaz pushed himself up from the ground, wiping his knife on Seth's arm before turning and moving towards her.
"Said he could have watched,"
he announced as he stepped up to her. He grabbed her breast as he grinned. The stench of alcohol was overwhelming. These boys were drunk. She aimed a kick between his legs. In the realm of stupid ideas, that was one of the most dumb. He grabbed her leg, then everything became unreal as she was thrown backwards, landing heavily on the ground. Her head spun with the impact as she tried to gather her wits. She watched as the three argued over who was first. Gaz, wielding his knife at the other two, won the discussion. He started to unbutton his pants as the other two held her down.
"Got something in here that will keep you from screaming, darling,"
he said as he began stalking towards her. There was a guttural noise from behind them. They turned to find Seth stood with fire in his eyes. Three moved in unison to face him. Marcy took the chance to escape them all, moving back toward the alleyway, hoping to get to the other side and find someone to help them. She hit the ground again. Someone had kicked at her leg as she moved. As she rolled over, she saw Smitty grinning at her. She became immediately aware that she showed far too much. Quickly, she closed her legs and pulled her dress back down.
"Seriously, you were best staying put,"
she heard Gaz say.
"I'll give it to you, though. You're a tough fucker, ain't you, mate?"
Gaz retrieved his knife from his back pocket, then started towards Seth again.
"Well, time to finish."
He was cut off in mid-flow, Marcy felt the hairs on her arms stand on end as the light above them flickered. Every part of her tingled in response to an unseen force around her.
There was a time when men took my wife from me. I was not there then, but now I am.
Marcy watched as Seth's face darkened. His hair had come loose and now cascaded around his shoulders. She couldn't help but notice, even in these circumstances, that the sight of his protective anger made him more beautiful.
I watched her die. Can you for a second understand the pain a man feels when his wife takes her last breath in his arms? Can you even contemplate the guilt it creates knowing that if you had arrived an hour earlier, you could have saved her?
His broad shoulders flexed as he seemed to grow before her eyes.
You will not leave this place alive,
he said, clenching his fists as he advanced on the three of them. In a flash, Gaz had swung for Seth with the knife, but compared to Seth, he appeared to be moving in slow motion. Soon as he started his swing, Seth grabbed his arm and twisted it before throwing him to the ground, then stamping on his chest. Marcy heard the crack of the ribs and grimaced just as Seth reached the other two. He planted his foot into Smitty's guts as he brought down his fist on Stay's head. Both boys collapsed to the ground with a thump. Seth lifted Stay from the floor by his ears, holding him at eye level. Both of his feet were 6 inches from the ground. The agony was written all over the young boy's face as his feet swung, struggling to find a purchase. Sparks emitted from around Seth. Marcy felt her hair lifting with the energy as Seth glowed into the frightened face of her would-be rapist.
Seth, please don't.
Marcy could see what he was about to do. Although they likely deserved their fate, she didn't want to watch anyone being badly hurt. Seth glanced at her. She felt compassion from him, but also the ire he had inside him.
Please, Seth, let them go,
she pleaded.
I'm not in the habit of giving mercy to any who attack those I love,
he growled.
But it seems you have found me on a day where even I can be calmed by the compassion of another human soul.
Groans came from the other two. Seth stared down to Gaz, who was just finding his breath. In a sharp movement, he headbutted Stay, who dropped to the ground, clutching his nose as he tried to stop the now pouring blood. Seth moved like a wolf. His footsteps were perfectly placed, even though he never took his eyes from the boy in front of him. Each step perfectly balanced his weight, and he looked like he could pounce at any time as his body flowed towards Gaz. He stood over him, watching him struggle for air through the pain of broken ribs. Seemingly satisfied at what he saw, he grabbed the boy's shirt, dragging him back to the other two. His eyes were wide. Marcy could see the intensity of his stare as he looked at them at his feet.
I watched as he screamed for mercy. Back then I was lost to my grief, but the memory lingers and I still see his face.
Seth continued. She watched as Gaz tried to stand, but then stopped as he noticed what Marcy saw. Suddenly, a ball of blue light appeared in each of Seth's hands. The air became thick as the clouds gathered above their heads as the lights in the street exploded. In the fading light, Seth glowed. A second later, the orbs floated towards the boys with eerie movements. Their light filled the space they were in, lighting their faces as they waited for what was about to happen. The other two boys watched in silence. Marcy could see Smitty cradling his friend, who was openly sobbing, the tears mixing with the blood running from his nose. Fear seemed to take hold of Gaz as he tried to scramble backwards, clutching his chest. Seth moved quicker and was on top of him again before he'd had chance to gain his feet. Seth seemed to grow more ominous in the glow of the balls, which now circled him as they crackled and sparkled, suspended mere feet from the four of them. Marcy pushed herself up from the floor, conscious that her tights were torn along with a broken heel on a shoe.
I gave you an option to leave,
Seth's voice boomed.
And you thought you could take my love from me again?
He peered into the eyes of the now cowering Gaz. The sight from where she stood was scary. For those closer, it must have been a terrifying sight.
I wasn't there then,
Seth continued.
But I am here now.
Gaz raised his hand placatingly.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I was just having a laugh. Please.
Marcy watched in awe as Seth dropped his hand. With the movement, one of the balls hit Gaz in the chest before he lifted from the floor. The sight of this huge, weeping boy hanging in midair in front of her husband gave Marcy pause. Despite what was happening around her, she found herself thinking back to what Seth had told her that day at Hater Rocks. She had presumed he was teasing her, but now...
I know you, Gary Lowe's. I can see into your soul.
Seth's voice was deep and powerful. Gary's pants became wet as he lost control of his bladder.
I know all of you.
He glanced down at the other two, who were visibly shaken.
Philip Smith, Smitty to his friends and you, Stephen Quayle.
He looked both in the eyes as he spoke their names.
I know where you live, and I know who your family is. I suggest that when you awake, you forget all about this incident and never speak of it again.
Gary nodded his head, as did the other two.
I see we understand each other.
There was a flash which lit up the sky. When her eyes adjusted back to the light given from the orb, she could see all three boys lying unconscious. Seth reached out to her. She took his hand, knowing that everything he had told her was the truth.
Stay strong, my love,
Marcy said.
We will find a way to get you out. Or you will find the way to get back to us.
Chapter 26, The Mara's Discovery. Hope remained focused on the Mara as she dried herself off. The room spun as she tried to dress while still keeping the twins in sight. It was an arduous task, as she had a foot in both realms, but her determination meant that even though she lost them a few times, they quickly reappeared. Once fully clothed, she opened the door and made her way to her bed. When Hope was comfortable, she concentrated to strengthen the connection between them.
Excellent, little mistress. This may feel a little disorientating. But you must keep your focus so we can show you what we saw,
the Mara instructed. Hope nodded, then took another deep breath as images began to fill her mind. Corey strutted across the immaculately kept grass, passing the lavish floral bushes carefully placed around the area for decoration. The imposing Stirling Castle stood proudly behind the gathered dignitaries ahead of him. There was a spring in his step as he crossed the ground without a single care for the armed retinue of James VI, the King of Scotland. As he approached, he sent out tendrils of energy towards the monarch and his guards as they engaged in a heated conversation with his advisers. It was 1590. Weapons were more deadly than they had been during his youth, so he needed to keep them from being unnecessarily fired in his direction. In fact, it would be better if the guards didn't notice him at all, he decided, as he manipulated the minds of those around him. The previous day had seen the king return to Scottish lands with his new bride, Anne. But during their journey, an unseasonal storm had threatened to sink their ship and those accompanying it. The king was currently recounting the experience to those gathered.
There were winds that tore at the sails faster than they could be brought down. It shredded the majority, and I feared that should we survive the storm, we would be stranded until help could arrive,
he said, as those around gasped at his tale.
A disastrous event indeed,
Corey interrupted as he drew alongside the king.
Who is this man?
The king asked.
Guards, seize him immediately.
That won't be necessary, my dear James.
Corey projected a calming energy towards the young monarch.
I am here as per your own instruction. Do you remember?
James looked slightly confused at first, but suddenly a memory appeared of this man and a conversation where he had asked him to attend him this very day.
Of course, I remember,
he said as he waved away the advancing soldiers.
What news, my dear man?
Grave news, I'm afraid, Your Highness. I bring word of witchcraft so foul that it has threatened your own life.
James looked more confused than he had been moments before.
What are you talking about?
He asked.
I have it on good authority that the storm which nearly sunk your ship was the work of witches, intent on taking your life for payment by an unknown source.
James considered the information for a moment.
Don't be absurd. There was a storm. Granted, it was unexpected, but nonetheless, it was a natural occurrence. Nothing more sinister than that.
Corey probed the king's mind as he listened. Satisfied with his efforts, he took a deep breath as he theatrically prostrated himself before James. Around them, several people began to hear buzzing sounds inside their heads as they watched the scene before them.
Your Majesty, witches are among us. As the protector of Scotland, and one personally attacked by these creatures, you should mobilize every resource to weed out these evil beasts. You need to ensure they never carry out another assault on you or your family.
James blinked repeatedly as the words sunk into his consciousness.
You're right, my good man. We must act at once.
He beckoned his attendant.
Find me those responsible for this treasonous act. I want them rounded up for questioning immediately.
He turned back to Corey.
Is there anything we should look for that marks people as witches?
Corey smiled as he regained his feet.
I suggest you center your search around North Berwick, as I believe there is a nest of these evil beings thereabouts. In terms of their powers, they can manipulate the weather, as well as the crops and livestock of our farming communities.
He reported.
You heard the man. Away to North Berwick. Root out those witches.
James commanded. Corey's grin broadened.
This should flush him out,
he thought.
He won't be able to resist helping one of these sacrifices. And then I will know where he is.
Months passed without any word of the man he sought. Corey had ingrained himself into James's court and could be found most days alongside the king, wandering the grounds of Holyrood House, conversing with the monarch. Corey had found a sympathetic ear in James, though that was never that important, as he could alter most minds. However, he noticed that where possible, it was best to manipulate more compliant victims so that they could get the best results. James was one such person. He had tried to influence Queen Elizabeth in England, but had only limited success. Yes, she searched out witches based on the descriptions he gave her, but she was not nearly as cruel as he wanted her to be. Fair trials were not the way to flush out a man who would be attracted to cruelty toward the innocent. If he lived, the only way to find him was to promote brutality towards those he sought to protect. As he strolled the gardens on a particularly fresh morning, he spoke to James about news one of his spies had provided him with. Over the years, Corey had built up a small empire of people willing to share gossip and news from the various locations where he was interested in learning progress. He had come to discover that his plans to control everything needed long-term commitment. In his early days, making his village do the things he wanted stemmed from a desire to pay them back for the things they had done to him. Later, his desire to get all to do as he asked needed a more structured effort. He had to find the right person to control. This was usually someone of influence or authority. Once he had them, he could ensure all followed his wishes. Finding the ease in which some would become compliant to his commands was a lesson he took great pleasure in exploiting. He considered the day he realized he could control others. He had been bullied and abused from the first moment it was announced that May would train him to become a spey worker. The men of his village laughed at the idea of a man doing woman's work. The stigma associated with his training led to other boys beating him regularly. One day in his 18th summer, he was ambushed by four thugs. They took to hitting him with sticks, whilst one, Gerald, threatened him with his knife.
Maybe we got ya, to see if you have a baby inside ya, like all other women, Corey.
He mocked as the others laughed.
Leave me alone!
He cried as he tucked his head into his chest whilst using his arms as a shield.
Boy seems upset. Do you need your mother, Corey?
Again, they all laughed as they took turns hitting and kicking him. As he lay there, he tried to think about how many times he had been in this position. It struck him that it had been so many that he had lost the ability to count. It seemed that at some point during every day since the village had learned of his training, he had been hit or abused in some way. His sister's husband was the village leader, yet did nothing to stop the attacks, even though he had pleaded with him to help.
You chose your own path, Corey. I am powerless to control those who feel you're less than a man to them.
He remembered the words well. It fueled his anger as he lay there taking another beating. In his mind, he tried to focus on the energy around him, hoping to find comfort in his training to perhaps lessen the pain of the blows. In his meditative state, he cried out in his mind toward them.
You've beaten me enough. You want to leave. Please leave me.
Suddenly, the attack stopped.
I think we've got other things to do. Let's leave him alone,
Gerald said. To Corey's astonishment, the others agreed without argument and left. That day started his journey towards the man he was today. The ability to control other people's minds was one not many spey workers had, and none were as skilled as he. The years passed, allowing him to practice his newfound abilities. He started manipulating his brother-in-law. It was soon common knowledge that attacks on him were not permitted.
My dear James,
he began as the king joined him as requested.
I have news from England.
I have no interest in what goes on in that wretched country. Do you know Elizabeth killed my mother?
James replied as he snapped the head off a rose he happened to be passing.
Yes, you have mentioned this to me previously. Many times, in fact.
Well then, you will know that the only news I would possibly consider listening to is the death of the hag that sits upon the throne.
James kicked some stones he found beside the flower bed.
Well, then my news will be welcome this morning.
James, stop moving.
What have you heard, Corey?
I have a connection in the court. A man named Sir Robert Cecil. Have you heard of him?
James considered the name for a moment or two.
Yes, I believe I know of this man. Nasty sort of fella. Fingers in all kinds of pies from my understanding.
That would be Robert,
Corey said.
Well, he and I have some business history together. I have provided him with information which helps cement his position within Elizabeth's court. In return, he... How do I put this? He does as I ask.
Really?
James looked impressed.
How does this involve me?
The Queen is gravely ill. My friend tells me she's not expected to live much longer. And, as you know, there is no man who could convince her to bear a child, so the throne will become vacant. I believe it is in both of our interests if you take that position. Robert will send word of his proposal soon. I expect you to welcome them and prepare for your new role as King of England.
James stared blankly at Corey. News of this sort rarely came his way. His mind raced with the possibilities.
But what of Scotland? Who will rule here if I take throne of England?
Corey gave him a cold stare. Sometimes the ignorance of people infuriated him.
You will rule Scotland. There is no reason why you can't be king of both countries simultaneously.
King of two countries? A united kingdom? I like that idea.
Then await communications, and do not forget of our other plans. I need you to maintain your hunts for witches across the country. When you take the throne of England, I want you to install the same process there. Am I clear?
James's eyes flashed momentarily with irritation at the way he was being spoken to.
I am the king. I will decide what's best to do.
His mouth grew slack as Corey forced energy into him. Little strands of pure thought connected them both as he imposed his will upon the king's mind.
I am sorry, Corey. I do not know what came over me. You are, of course, correct. We need to intensify the search. And once King of England, I will, of course, install witch hunters as soon as possible.
Hope lost her connection. The effort of remaining in that state for so long had taken a huge toll on her. Even though she was drained, she clung to the connection for as long as she could. As she came away from the images she was being shown, there was a sense of confusion at what she'd watched. Who was this man, and why did people seem to do whatever he asked? The information was overwhelming.
"We can see you are spent, little mistress. We are keen to return to our master, so we'll leave you to recover. If we discover anything more, we will contact you again."
Hope nodded.
"How will I know you have returned, Mara?"
she asked.
"You will know, mistress. Pay heed to your feelings. They should tell you."
With that, they were gone.